Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this half-hour segment, we're going to update a story that we've been following for quite some time, specifically since it happened on December 21st, 1988. And that is, as veteran listeners will no doubt recognize by now, the story concerning the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. Although the official version has it that this was those nasty old Libyans doing this heinous act, in fact, the evidence suggests that the truth is considerably more complex than that, although some sources say, and I view some of those as credible, that eventually the bombing was subcontracted out to a Libyan group that was part of a sort of an international Middle Eastern terrorist consortium. The evidence suggests that the elements of Western intelligence were complicit with the bombing. The degree of that complicity varies according to the sources. There is very firm evidence that the linchpin, so to speak, of the milieu that was involved in the bombing of Pan Am 103 was a Syrian drug trafficker and terrorist named Manzer El-Kassar, who, as a matter of public record, was not only on the White House payroll and was working for Oliver North and Company in the Iran-Contra scandal, but was, according to John Loftus, the co-author of The Secret War Against the Jews, one of the best books ever written about American intelligence and international fascism, Manzer El-Kassar was the main individual responsible for procuring East Bloc arms for the Contras, as well as for effecting the Iranian weapons transfers going from the United States to Iran. Manzer El-Kassar, protected by elements of Western intelligence associated with the Reagan and Bush administrations and Oliver North, was responsible, according to the DEA, for 20% of the heroin being brought into the United States. He and his associates have been deeply implicated in the Achille Lauro hijacking, as well as the bombing of Pan Am 103. Some claim that Manzer El-Kassar actually brought the bomb that brought down Pan Am 103 to the place where it was ultimately put on the plane. Some claim that elements of Western intelligence knew that particular plane was going to be bombed and got their personnel off, and that they deliberately sacrificed the McKee team, a group of military intelligence operatives from this country, who were functioning the way American military intelligence operatives should have, and were trying to blow the whistle about Manzer El-Kassar, his role with the U.S. hostages being held in Lebanon, and that they were returning to the United States to blow the whistle about Manzer El-Kassar and his complicity with some elements of the Iran-Contra team. And the Interfor report, the Pan Am Insurance Investigators report, claims that elements of U.S. intelligence deliberately let the bombing proceed. That report has been hotly disputed, and there has been a discreditation attempt. At the very least, it appears that Manzer El-Kassar had known that a Pan Am plane was going to be bombed in December. He alerted American and British intelligence, and all of America and Britain's diplomats were taken off of Pan Am flights. Whatever the degree of complicity with Manzer El-Kassar and his American and British handlers with the bombing of Pan Am 103, it certainly appears that elements of Western intelligence are complicit. The degree of complicity remains to be accurately determined, but the Libyan connection appears to be at best an incomplete analysis, and certainly appears to overlook the very, very disturbing evidence that elements of Western intelligence were at least complicit, if not actively involved, with the bombing. And the protection of Manzer El-Kassar, who was being protected in Spain by the U.S. ambassador to Spain, Joseph Zapala, a personal appointee of George Bush, the Manzer El-Kassar connection to Pan Am 103 appears to be the most important element of that particular crime. Those who would like to find out more about the bombing of Pan Am 103 are referred to Spitfire, the tape duplication service that handles the various half-hour segments, the interviews that I've done, the weekly One Step Beyond shows, and the archive shows, specifically RFA 35, The December Surprise, The Politics of Terror, and the Exoneration of the Secret Team, goes into Manzer El-Kassar and the bombing of Pan Am 103. Also, RFA 38, The Terror Connection Part 3, has a great deal of material about Manzer El-Kassar. Among the items that we have discussed in connection with RFAs 35 and 38 is the information that has been provided by a former Defense Intelligence Agency operative named Lester Coleman, who maintains that a DIA operation in the Middle East and charged with a counter-terrorist and hostage location operation was apparently sabotaged from within U.S. intelligence. Members of that team were assassinated, and it was Lester Coleman's contention that the DIA team functioning in a counterterror capability in the Middle East was deliberately sabotaged by elements of Western intelligence associated with Manzar al-Qassar, and behind him, the Syrian-controlled Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. Due to diplomatic reasons, the Syrian hand in the Lebanese hostage-holding glove, to coin a phrase, has been deliberately overlooked. And indeed, the Syrians control the Bekaa Valley. It is the contention of Lester Coleman that, once again, elements of Western intelligence deliberately sabotaged the counter-terrorist operations that other elements of Western intelligence were undertaking. It is the contention of Lester Coleman, too, that a DEA operation, a Drug Enforcement Administration operation, which was deliberately allowing Lebanese heroin from the Bekaa Valley to flow into the United States, was also implicated in the bombing of Pan Am 103, and that the bombers were aware of this sting operation and utilized that sting operation to get the bomb onto the flight, namely Pan Am 103. The contentions of people like the Interfor company, the Pan Am 103 Insurance Investigators Report, and Lester Coleman have been hotly disputed, and there has been an evident cover-up of at least some of that information underway. Lester Coleman himself, as we're about to see, has been very badly treated, and as we looked at in a couple of half-hour segments recorded in late 1995, a documentary film about Pan Am 103 suggesting the complicity of elements of Western intelligence with that crime, that film entitled The Maltese Double Cross, was apparently suppressed in Britain, and those who attempted to show it were subjected to a number of considerable irregularities. If the supplemental discussion in this segment appears incomplete, once again I apologize and I refer interested listeners to the aforementioned RFAs 35 and 38 available from Spitfire. That is where the appropriate supplemental discussion can be examined at length. There are also a couple of previous half-hour segments available from Spitfire, again, recorded in late 1995 that discuss, that update, I should say, some of the aspects of the bombing of Pan Am 103. By the way, the Germans have released people involved with the bombing of Pan Am 103. That has been deeply injurious to the British and others that have attempted to get to the bottom of Pan Am 103. We're going to update the Pan Am 103 story, and we're going to begin with an article researched for us by Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. Dave got this following article from the Sunday Telegraph of Sunday, February 16th of 1997, and this specifically comes from page 26. This particular article updates the situation vis-a-vis Lester Coleman, the aforementioned former DIA operative who has run afoul of mainstream U.S. intelligence for his whistleblowing on Pan Am 103. This particular story was authored by Coughlin, C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N, I'm not sure how that's pronounced. It is headlined, U.S., quote, maltreating, unquote, spy who blew whistle on Lockerbie bomb. And once again, this updates the situation of Lester Coleman. The article reads, Lockerbie campaigners in Britain and America are voicing concern over the U.S. authorities' treatment of a renegade American spy who claims there has been a massive international cover-up over the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. Lester Coleman, a former agent with the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, provoked controversy on both sides of the Atlantic by claiming that the tragedy in which 270 people died was caused by an American drug sting operation in Lebanon that went badly wrong. He was serving in the Middle East at the time. Mr. Coleman and his family were forced to go into hiding in Europe after U.S. intelligence chiefs ordered his arrest on charges of perjury. His supporters claimed that the charges were brought because he had contradicted the official American view that Libya was responsible for the bombing. But after living in exile for 6 years and in failing health, Mr. Coleman returned to the U.S. at the end of last year intending to clear his name. He was arrested at Atlanta Airport and has been held since at New York's Manhattan Detention Center, which houses murderers, rapists, and drug dealers. Numerous bail applications have been rejected, even though he has been diagnosed as suffering from cancer, and the charges he faces are relatively petty ones. Vivian Shevitz, S-H-E-V-I-T-Z, his defense lawyer, last week wrote to the judge responsible for the case, condemning as, quote, an outrage, unquote, the medical treatment Mr. Coleman has received since being remanded in custody. Ms. Shevitz claims that Mr. Coleman, now in his 60s, has been denied proper medical care since being returned to jail a few days after undergoing surgery. Quote, The way the authorities are treating Coleman is a total overreaction, she said. There is no justification for treating him like this. It suggests the authorities are afraid of something and want to keep him quiet, unquote. Dr. Jim Swire, S-W-I-R-E, the spokesman for British relatives of the Lockerbie victims, said he was disturbed at how the U.S. authorities were handling the case. Quote, "The gross maltreatment of Coleman by the American authorities appears to fit a pattern of the victimization of people who challenge the official version that Libya was solely to blame for Lockerbie," he said. Certainly, the manner in which various American intelligence agencies have reacted to Mr. Coleman's claims over Lockerbie suggests they deserve a more thorough investigation than they have so far received. When I interviewed Mr. Coleman for the Sunday Telegraph in 1993 at a secret location in Portugal, he was escorted by an armed Scandinavian bodyguard who had been lent by a friendly European government that supported his claims. In essence, Mr. Coleman's story, as related in his book Trail of the Octopus, is relatively straightforward. During the late 1980s, Mr. Coleman was working for the Defense Intelligence Agency based in Cyprus, then a major intelligence gathering post for the Middle East. Part of his task was to spy on the activities of a second American organization, the Drug Enforcement Agency. Mr. Coleman claims that the DEA was operating a member of Beirut-based sting operations by which agents... Mr. Coleman claims that the DEA was operating a number of Beirut-based, quote, sting, unquote, operations by which agents allowed controlled, unquote, deliveries of drugs from Lebanon to America through Frankfurt Airport in the hope of arresting U.S.-based drug gangs. But Mr. Coleman says the operation was infiltrated by Iranian-backed terrorists who had been ordered to avenge the shooting down of an Iranian Airbus in July of 1988. Instead of placing a suitcase of heroin on the flight, they checked in a suitcase full of explosives. Mr. Coleman initially made these allegations in an affidavit to Pan Am during the airline's own investigation into the tragedy. But it was only after he reiterated them in his book, which was published 3 years later, that the U.S. intelligence establishment responded by accusing him of perjury. So again, summing up what we've looked at in this segment, Lester Coleman, a DIA operative, that's Defense Intelligence Agency operative based in Cyprus, maintains that his organization was spying on the Drug Enforcement Agency, U.S. agency obviously in charge with monitoring, with interdicting illegal drug traffic into the United States. Also, as we looked at in RFAs 26 and 27, an agency that has been, to a certain extent, compromised by some of those same drug trafficking interests. DEA has frequently served, or has occasionally, I should say, served as a front for other elements of U.S. intelligence. Again, Mr. Coleman claimed in some of the material we've discussed in supplements to RFA 35 that elements of the DIA operation of which he was a part were deliberately compromised, and this led to the ending of that operation and the deaths of some of those personnel. He has been held in the Manhattan Detention Center on relatively minor charges of perjury. His attorney, Vivian Shevitz, claims that he has been denied proper medical care. He is apparently suffering from cancer and is apparently in failing health. And his story continues to be suppressed here in the United States. His book, The Trail of the Octopus, has, however, finally been published by a small San Francisco-based publisher. And again, note the alarm on the part of those who have been attempting to get to the bottom of the Pan Am 103 story at the continued mistreatment that Lester Coleman has had. As I mentioned, a small San Francisco-based publisher called the Argonaut Press has now finally published Lester Coleman's book, The Trail of the Octopus, and there is an interesting local connection to the ongoing Pan Am 103 mystery and apparent cover-up. And this involves a very disturbing death of the maker of the aforementioned documentary about Pan Am 103 and the cover-up, The Maltese Double Cross. That filmmaker, the late, unfortunately, Alan Frankovich, is the focal point of a column that was published in the San Francisco Independent of April 22nd of 1997. That is a small, obviously, independent newspaper out of San Francisco. The author of this particular column is Warren Hinkle, former publisher of Ramparts Press, a former columnist for the San Francisco Examiner, and a longtime fixture in Bay Area alternative journalism, and also one of the more courageous people involved with that. Warren Hinkle entitled this particular column, A Most Mysterious Death, and research credit on this goes to a listener. By the way, that last article was from the Sunday Telegraph of Sunday, February 16th of 1997. Our research credit on this goes to a listener. This is, again, Warren Hinkle's column from the San Francisco Independent of April 22nd of 1997. This concerns the death of Alan Frankovich, and it is entitled by Warren Hinkle, A Most Mysterious Death, and it reads as follows. Alan Frankovich, a friend of mine who makes documentary film about the CIA's propensity to create killing fields that are too hot for Oliver Stone to touch, collapsed and died going through U.S. Customs in Houston Thursday afternoon. Alan was well known in San Francisco filmmaking and left-wing circles. When he died, he was carrying documents relating to several explosive topics, including 1, a U.S. intelligence cover-up of the truth behind the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 1988, 2, CIA involvement under a Republican administration in Indonesia that Republicans in Congress are now investigating the Democrats for, and 3, the unsolved assassination of Swedish Premier Olof Palme. Alan worked for many years in Berkeley before moving his film operations to London a few years ago. His death sent shockwaves through the intellectual North Beach world he once frequented. Big, seismic shockwaves considering the material he was packing. Monday in North Beach, in Gino and Carlo's, a calm eye in the conspiracy hurricane that often buffets the city, I asked Kurt Gentry, the nationally respected author and expert on the FBI, how secure a briefcase full of hot intelligence items would be if its owner collapsed in the hands of U.S. Customs. Gentry recalled the time during the Vietnam War protests that Jane Fonda, the former Mrs. Tom Hayden, was stopped by Customs while crossing the border from Canada and detained while the government boys dutifully checked out the prescriptions on her drugs to make sure that they were prescriptions. The entire contents of Fonda's address book, also ever briefly lifted by Customs, later were found in her voluminous FBI file, Gentry said. Not a one among Frankovich's many friends I spoke with from Europe to the East Bay believed in Alan's unexpected death. He was 55, overweight, and drank a bit, but so do a lot of similarly situated living, was completely accidental, or that his papers were safe in U.S. custody. That's a bit of humor here by Warren Hinkle, who is, I don't know his exact age, he's considerably older than I am, and I'm 47, and he is overweight and has been known to take a drink himself, and he is still among the living. Continuing, Alan, quote, Alan may have gotten a whiff of something from a fountain pen, unquote, said former CIA operative Oswald LeWinter, who collaborated with Frankovich on his CIA Euro Intelligence Terrorist Connection documentaries. By the way, I would issue a caveat about Oswald LeWinter. He is a former CIA operative and under the alias of Mr. Razine was involved with disseminating disinformation about the October surprise. Continuing, of the reference to the fountain pen, LeWinter was referring to a CIA technical division killer pen. Conspiracy rumors are part of the San Francisco experience. Anyone who was here during the tumultuous protest years of the 60s and 70s is no stranger to continuing rumors, and those living through the 1980s into the 1990s and toward the millennium are familiar with them. Much of the San Francisco that is left from the 60s may have turned its attention to civic and neighborhood issues, but few forget the sins of the bad guys past and the continuing players against imperialism by any other name. Alan Frankovich continued to be one of those players in what Rudyard Kipling, the Bard of British Empire a century ago, called The Great Game, unquote, of espionage. Frankovich was on the explosive side of the espionage, and his exposés and crisp documentaries broadcast all too frequently by the corporation-encumbered PBS, but shown frequently on national television in Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Australia, were most dangerous to the espionage establishments because Frankovich had his critical eye on their latest dirty game. It is now an object of almost commonplace knowledge that the CIA and other national intelligence agencies was in bed with the mafia, from Vietnam War-era dope dealing to the well-known CIA mafia attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro with exploding cigars and seashells. What Frankovich was on to in his films was the post-Cold War U.S. intelligence alliances with European and Latin American narco-terrorists and arms dealers. This nefarious alliance of convenience has crippled the government's war on drugs because the government's intelligence agencies protect the very operators who must be indicted if drugs are to be stopped. This connection was explored in Frankovich's latest documentary on the Pan Am 103 bombing, called, somewhat confusingly, The Maltese Double Cross. The film documents a U.S. intelligence-sanctioned and controlled drug delivery system of heroin from Lebanon via Pan Am flights from Frankfurt to London and on to Detroit. U.S. drug efforts had to settle for catching the drug dealers on the other end because U.S. secret operations in the Middle East protected Syrian drug turf in Lebanon for reasons of state. Again, translation, Manzar El-Kassar. Full disclosure is not a San Francisco Press tradition. Witness the recent overblown attempts by the San Francisco Examiner to smear Police Commissioner Ed Petrillo in front page stories, absurdly attempting to make something out of the nothing that Petrillo had been found not guilty of construction price fixing 10 years ago, while hypocritically never mentioning that the Examiner itself was found guilty of price fixing last year in charges brought by the Independent. However, I should disclose that Frankovich was not only an old political and social friend of mine, but that his film's research into the truth of the Lockerbie bombing, which he kindly shared with me, was instrumental in my decision to publish, for San Francisco's Argonaut Press, unrelated to the film, a book of similar theses on the Pan Am tragedy, The Trail of the Octopus. The book was withdrawn from publication and pulped in England last year, amid charges of U.S. intelligence-inspired attacks on it. Frankovich's film was similarly attacked by U.S. intelligence, the U.S. Embassy forced its withdrawal from the London Film Festival, and the site that premiered the film in Scotland was firebombed. When Frankovich died in Houston, among the missing papers he was carrying were documents clearing the co-author of The Trail of the Octopus, former Defense Intelligence Agency operative Lester Coleman, of phony U.S. charges of passport fraud. Frankovich's next film projects were about the CIA, Ronald Reagan, and George Bush in Indonesia, and about the U.S. involvement in the murder of Swedish Premier Olof Palme. Small wonder everyone is suspicious about his death, eh? Well, indeed, I do think there is reason to be suspicious about the death of Alan Frankovich. And again, I refer interested listeners not only to RFAs 35 and 38 for the Manzar El-Kassar connection to the Iran-Contra machinations, but also I also refer them to the 2 half-hour segments that update the Pan Am 103 investigation and also discuss the documentary that the late unfortunate Alan Frankovich had made, again, the aforementioned Maltese Double Cross and some of the irregularities that that film had experienced when Frankovich tried to get it aired overseas. Now, again, note that Alan Frankovich was going through U.S. Customs and died of an apparent heart attack. Certainly people do die of heart attacks. This is not to say that does not take place. Obviously it does. At the same time, it's a matter of public record that our intelligence agencies and others have for decades had the lethal technology to simulate various kinds of apparently natural deaths, including heart attacks and cancer, and to do so without any sort of toxicological trace. For a major intelligence agency to effect a heart attack is relatively relative child's play, and the toxic agents are available to do that in such a way as the apparent heart attack victim would not prove positive to a toxicological test. One, I think, has to wonder very seriously about the death of Alan Frankovich and the circumstances that surround it. This is yet another mysterious death in the long series of mysterious deaths of people that have either been investigating or involved in various intelligence-related machinations. It's one of the reasons that I think it is important for people to be aware of this type of research. The United States is, in fact, no longer a true democracy. While we still have some residual elements of democracy, at the same time, our intelligence services have been involved in these types of operations for quite some time, and I think it is well past time that the mainstream press, as well as the so-called alternative media, and as always note the use of the term so-called, began getting up off of their hind legs and taking stock of the stories like Alan Frankovich's suppressed documentary, Lester Coleman's suppressed book, the rotten treatment that Lester Coleman has received, and the chilling treatment that Alan Frankovich may have received in going through customs. Again, perhaps it was just bad timing, but I think one has to wonder, and I think people of a good conscience and sincerely democratic instincts with a small d, should be very concerned about the death of Alan Frankovich and should begin looking into that. I made reference to a tape duplication service during the course of this half-hour segment. That tape duplication service is called Spitfire. That is one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. Spitfire can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, Post Office Box 1179. That is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Once again, that's Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, Post Office Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179. That is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. There is also, by the way, an email address available for Spitfire. The email address is alcalame, that's alcalame, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, that email address, alcalame, at ix.netcom.com. And again, if Spitfire has the weekly, have the various half-hour segments that I've produced, the hour programs that I've produced, the various interviews that I've done, they stock the weekly massive One Step Beyond shows that I produce on my home base station, KFJC-FM, in the South San Francisco Bay Area. They also stock all of the archive shows now and most of the lecture tapes as well. So please be advised of Spitfire's situation. I'm updating the webpage and should have an updated webpage address for you with all of the relevant information, including now descriptions of the various half-hour segments. People have inquired about the publication I'm in the process of attempting to launch. That publication is entitled Other Means. Please don't contact me at the station. I cannot discuss that at any length because that is a for-profit venture. Please contact Other Means directly. Other Means can be written to at P.O. Box 191710, Post Office Box 191710, Box 191710. That is in San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. Once again, the mailing address, P.O. Box 191710, San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. There's also an email address for Other Means. By the way, this is not a personal email address. Some people have sent me email and then been disappointed when I didn't get back to them. I frequently do not see that email for a couple of months and sometimes longer than that. That email address is DEMORY, that's DEMORY at well.com. Once again, DEMORY at well.com. And again, please note that that is the email address for Other Means. It is not a personal email address. Okay, so people who are inquiring about Other Means, please contact Other Means. Please don't write to me at the station because then I just have to forward the information to Other Means. Okay? All righty. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.